This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Alan Menken.
A composer.
What the hell do you do?
Oh, I'm the Alan Menken, the composer.
Steven Schwartz, lyricist. I'm going to try and keep my voice pitched here. So
and I'll be up here.
Right.
What was the challenge for you guys to write a score that was part parody, but at the same time more tribute to the classic Disney anime?
I think the first challenge was... for us was finding that musical palette and lyrical palette and performance palette that really spoke to everybody and said, we are in the world of early Walt, to have that place to start. Because for me, in any musical, getting audiences in and getting to go, I get it, I'm with you on this journey, is the biggest and most important challenge.
How different was it that you've done?
Yeah, I just want to respond. I think that you articulated what the assignment was, which was to do precisely that, to try to deliver both numbers as numbers that would be kind of a tribute to the history of animated features, but also be satirical of them and exist on both those. On both levels at the same time, that was the trick.
And tone would have been a nightmare to try and come up with, then, I would think.
It was, yes, totally. Well, it wasn't a nightmare because
no, it was just a matter of just finding the common denominator.
Itself. But part of it was to understand and to be able to articulate for ourselves what the assignment was, which is pretty much as you've described it.
How different was it when you'd done straight Disney movies?
Well, we always had tongue in cheek. I got to say, I mean, Howard and I, from Little Mermaid on, there was always a little tongue in cheek, and always, as Stephen says, postmodern approach to it. But as far as this, all I had to do was sort of play it straight. I just had to play it hyper straight, so to speak, and be in the Walt's world, be in that world where we're, you know, completely innocent, completely optimistic, and we fall in love in a flash. But, so that provides the entry into what happens. Everything gets twisted when they come into our world, and she's still this, you know, our animated heroine. The song possibilities then become just so much fun.
Yeah, and I tried to sort of channel the classic Walt Disney sensibility and then push it just that little bit further in terms of choices of words or certain lyrics. I mean, to me, the in True Love's Kiss, where she says, you know, because lips are the only things that touch, that sort of idea once I sort of found that tone of it, then it was just a matter of trying to find decent jokes.
And her very first words, when she goes, when you meet the someone who is meant for you, you know, that we looked at Snow White, and she goes, oh, look, she speaks it, and there's that little warbly singing. And then I demoed it just like that.
He did. He was one of the best Snow Whites you've ever heard.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
From the animated world sing in the movie, right?
Say it again?
Only characters that come from the animated world sing in the movie, right? Or am I?
That is correct. Well, there is the number where Central Park kind of joins her.
And the main characters, yes.
Is that because they're from that world?
Yes. That's the conceit of, that's the brilliant notion that Bill Kelly had when he created the idea of Enchanted, and as we've told some of the other groups we've spoken to, we heard about this movie, the title and the concept, a long time ago, and I, for one, was extremely covetous of trying to be get involved with it because I thought Bill Kelly's concept was so clever, and I had no idea if Disney was even thinking of it as a musical at all. So,
well, I actually was involved. Yeah. 4 or 5 years ago, and as he wrote an opening number in an earlier incarnation. But went back into development.
Yeah, but the concept was that the people in 2D animation sing. Yeah. And people, needless to say, in real life, don't.
Right.
And so putting that up against each other and allowing sort of the Patrick Dempsey character, who is kind of speaks for us, our point of view, to respond to this girl singing.
Don't sing.
Yeah,
oh, don't
please.
Sing.
And I really don't dance and all that stuff. Yeah.
Do you guys miss the 2D animation world at all? I mean, do you think that it strikes me that this movie could... regenerative interest.
Well, I actually, first of all, I love it. I mean, it's there forever for all of us to look at, God knows. I miss the process. I mean, I'm so happy with where my life is. It's not like it's a lack. But those animators and the storyboards, and you go into those buildings, and there was a wonderful purity of process in the world of animation. It's different from the world of live action, where every film
and of CGI,
every film is its own production, and there's all kinds of, you know, the outside world comes in a lot more. Animation, you still felt sort of the scent of Walt, even in the days of Mermaid and Beauty and Aladdin and Pocahontas. It was a wonderful place to be, but
I miss the level of art, frankly, the beauty of that of what the animation looked like.
Yeah.
I do miss that a little bit. I think that seems to be, at least thus far, impossible to achieve in CGI.
They can't capture that at all.
They can't do it.
But there's, you know, and you guys probably interviewed some of the animators, and there was a wonderful, you know, naivete and pure artistic vision with them that was great to be around. And they still are there, and John Musker and Ron Clements are working on a new project over at with Disney.
Alan, you worked on Little Shop of Horrors, which was based on the Roger Corman movie. Did you ever think you'd see the day where they were doing musicals of Flashdance, Wedding Singer, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels?
Never really thought about it one way or the other. You know, if people think there's a buck to be made, nothing surprises me.
since much of this film is kind of self-referential in terms of the Disney characters and some of the things that have been Disney movies, was there any variations on some themes that you had come up with in your previous films that you kind of used here just to kind of remind people of particular songs or anything like that?
Well, certainly That's How You Know is a send-up of sort of the Disney production number that began to be perfected, or actually began with when Alan worked with Howard Ashman in numbers such as Under the Sea, Be Our Guest, and then we did one together in Topsy Turvy for Hunchback of Notre Dame. So we were definitely spoofing ourselves. And also So Close, the number in the ballroom, has deliberate references, including the camera move, the famous camera move of Beauty and the Beast. Yeah.
And we brought in Robbie Buchanan to arrange it, and Robbie actually had arranged the singles of Beauty and the Beast and A Whole New World and Colors of the Wind.
Yeah.
Some of it's...
Yeah, it was fun to both spoof, if you will, the old Disney films of the 40s, but then to take a couple of pokes at ourselves too. That was fun.
Did you go back and look at was it Snow White that whistled?
Absolutely.
Where it comes, because that happy
absolutely
is definitely
Snow White, Cinderella, and yeah. Sleeping Beauty. We looked at very carefully in terms of how music was used, what the style of music was, in terms of how they got into musical numbers and so on. And we were really trying to channel that world.
I mean, all of us were just looking at the prototypes and going, "Oh, this is great, this is great." But you know, Kevin would go, Oh, let's look at this number from this moment from Snow White, or let's look at this number from Cinderella. That's why it was hard, that opening, because you want to catch. I finally said, Stephen, you got to come into the room with me. Kevin is in town. Kevin, you got to come into the room. Mm-hmm. Close the door. And I literally ended up writing what is now True Love's Kiss with them in the room to make sure that we all approved the same thing at the same time.
Because
we all were going, oh, that's good, but let's try that.
But Happy Working Song came really fast.
That was fast.
That was pretty easy.
That's How You Know was so much fun, to create those counter melodies one on the other and then open up into this chorus so close as...
But we definitely looked at you, to answer your question, Happy Working Song is obviously pretty much out of Snow White, out of both Whistle While You Work and that the thing where they do the dishes and Dopey with the soap bubbles and everything. I mean, we really looked at that. There's a little bit of reference to the Busy Little Mice and Cinderella, but basically it's Snow White.
There's so many comic lyrics in this, though, like even though you're vermin. I remember hearing that.
It's always good to be able to use the word vermin in a song, isn't it?
That's right. So was it an intent to make, some of the more comedic lyrics in some cases?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, and I'm pleased it worked.
Yeah,
no,
we
were definitely going for, I was looking for jokes, definitely.
Alan, can you give us a progress report on Mermaid on stage, and I'm interested, did you at the start think that it was doable as a theater piece?
I hadn't never, you know, I hadn't really hadn't thought about Mermaid for the stage, especially because of the challenge of being under the sea, and everyone knows that that was one of the difficulties. When Francesca Zambello came aboard as director, and she worked a lot with George Siepen, and his sets use light in this brilliant way where it takes on light and it can reflect it either to look aquatic or to look like the sea, along with all the other stagecraft that, that is available to us, then it became possible. It actually had been in the works for about 5 years, though. We've been working on it in various ways. We had our first preview last night on Broadway, and I got emails from a number of people who have all said it went really, really well. But, that's a, you know.
Are there additional, how closely, I mean, obviously close, you stick to the movie pretty...
Okay. The original songs by Howard Eshman and I are all there.
Any additional ones?
Yes, 10 new songs as well. With with Glenn Slater, his name is the lyricist. And it's, I think it's quite seamless. I think it's, I like Beauty and the Beast. I think it's going to be a very seamless experience. And audiences seem to love it. Knock on...
We hear there's an Adina song that's maybe on the DVD but didn't make it into the film.
Yeah.
I know, isn't that, that's so weird. I kept saying to Kevin, Lima, you have Idina Menzel in this movie, and she's not going to sing. We did a closing number, which was in fact a title song called Enchanted. But what happened was that stylistically, by the time we got to that point in the film, for characters who, because she was never an animated character, it didn't actually work stylistically for her to sing. I actually think Idina is wonderful in the film.
And an animated character, so why wouldn't they try to figure out a way of doing something with her?
It was also we talked about it. We did in fact talk about that. But the amount of time we would have had to spend with her in the animated world didn't seem justified. There were reasons why, practically, tonally, and stylistically, it didn't work. And actually, if a different actress had been playing the role of Nancy, it would never even have arisen. It was just because it was Idina, but you know, Idina's a wonderful actress, and I think she's terrific in the movie without singing. So.
It's a title song called Enchanted. I just wondered what it is.
Yes.
There were two songs called... Also, there was an alternative to So Close, when people said, we love this song, but could you... I wrote another. We wrote a song called another song called Enchanted.
Yeah, but that wasn't Idina.
Ballad.
That wasn't
Idina. No. Just there were two songs called Enchanted.
But aren't you almost setting up a great moment for if you guys do a sequel that the person you're putting in the animated world is also a great singer?
That had never occurred to us, but thank you for suggesting it. No, truly. The idea of a sequel. I don't think it ever really occurs to somebody when they're doing a film, and you know, if a film proves popular, that those are always business decisions. If someone wants to make a sequel, then you think about it. But actually, that hadn't occurred to me. So, if for whatever reason they decide they want to, you know, continue,
but maybe
story,
someday if it happens, great. People will think we had brilliant foresight.
That's right. We'll take credit for it. We'll say yes. That's why we had Idina in the first place.
What are you guys working on at the moment?
Mermaid. I have Sister Act, musical Sister Act, actually opening in London next fall, and Leap of Faith, being directed by Taylor Hackford on Broadway. It's going to have a workshop this spring and then open the following season.
So they're all based on movies, still, right?
Yeah, aren't they? You know, it's just Broadway. Is it? I don't know why people are surprised by that. In that Broadway is basically an adaptation medium. It's so much. You know, and films are a vital, important part of our culture.
Well, also movies, because of the way they're structured, frankly, they lend themselves well to musicalization because of the there are technical reasons why the storytelling, the way it occurs in a movie, lends itself well to musicals.
So the Leap of Faith one, is there a lot of new gospel music in that, or other styles?
Very heavily gospel, a little bit of country, a little bit of rock and theater. So,
these are projects that I'm not.
By the way, Stephen is working on an opera.
Yeah, recklessly and foolishly, I'm working on an opera.
An opera?
Yeah.
Yes.
What
I'm doing an opera based on, again, a film based on Seance in a Wet Afternoon, a film from the 60s. That starred Kim Stanley and Richard Attenborough, and that's for the premiere is for the opera company in Santa Barbara. As a matter of fact, for 2009.
How are you changing it?
Well, they're singing.
Oh, how
no, I'm sorry.
How is the libretto being different from the screenplay?
To some extent, it's not. There are I did make some changes in terms of the story. I brought a character on stage who's referred to in the original, but isn't in the film, which is the ghost of the son.
And independent of anything that may come from this, Stephen and I are also looking for another film project.
Right. So if you have one, let us know.
Yeah.
Well, we have something in mind.
Well, the sequel to this.
There you go.
You have your go.
We should live so long.
Stephen is taking.
Oh, I have. Are we done? I have an informal poll that I'm taking. Okay, for perhaps obvious reasons, I'm asking everybody that we've been talking to what your favorite song in the film is. For you needn't justify it in any way. All right, I'm just going to go around the room. We have to do this with a certain degree of. Okay, we're going right around the room. You start it. Okay, go.
Central Park.
That's how you know. Okay, sir. Your favorite song in the film?
First one, Kim.
True Love's Kiss.
First. Central Park.
Thank you.
That's How I Know.
Okay.
Central Park. That's How I Know.
Okay.
Central Park.
Thank you.
Central Park.
Okay. Okay. There seems to be consensus developing.
Yeah. We don't like rest.
No. We obviously have a reason for asking.
There's a single coming out.
No.
Well, we have to figure. Well, then exactly. And they ask you which one you. Yeah.
Oh.
They ask you.
No. That's exactly what it is.
We don't know. I don't know what to